Rakaro Pavanathala Parikair Akshatoranai Swarnarupyaya Shai Sringai Sankulam Sarvato Grihai. That city was surrounded by walls and parks, and within it were towers, canals, windows, and outlets. The houses there were decorated with domes made of gold, silver, and iron. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The body is protected by walls of skin. The hairs on the body are compared to parks, and the highest parts of the body, like the nose and head, are compared to towers. The wrinkles and depressions on different parts of the body are compared to trenches or canals. The eyes are compared to windows, and the eyelids are compared to protective gates. The three types of metal, gold, silver, and iron, represent the three modes of material nature. Gold represents goodness, silver passion, and iron ignorance. The body is also sometimes considered to be a bag containing three elements, three dhatu, mucus, bile, and air, kapha, pitta, vayu. Yasyatma buddhi kunapetra dhaduke. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84-13. According to Bhagavatam, one who considers this bag of mucus, bile, and air to be the self is considered no better than a cow or an ass. We are reading today morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, entitled The Characteristics of King Bhuranjan, Text Number 14. Narada Muni, being a Mahabhagavat, Mahajan, whose heart is completely purified with devotion, is an instrument of Krishna's compassion wherever he may go. That is the nature of one who truly loves Krishna. That one's body, mind, words, and life are an incessant offering of love for the pleasure of Krishna. Love means selfless, without false ego. False ego means I and mine, without a false sense of proprietorship over anything, one's body, mind, intelligence, one's wealth, one's abilities, they all belong to Krishna. We are not proprietors of anything. If we honestly accept this truth in our hearts, then it will be demonstrated in that our every word, even our every thought and action, will be in the service attitude for the pleasure of the Lord. The enjoying spirit is due to the disease of the false sense of proprietorship. thinking this body, the senses, and this mind are mine to enjoy. And the objects of the senses that are given facilities to me, they are mine to enjoy. To the degree this illusion is prominent within our lives, we are entangled in the complexities of materialistic karma. Reality is to understand Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. This is the fundamental principle of bhakti. In Sanatana Shiksha, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained chapters, practically an entire volume of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, is Lord Chaitanya's elaborate instructions to Sanatana Goswami. He sat for well over a month instructing him every day, all day. But the first of his teachings is this: Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. The constitutional nature of every living being is that we are eternal servants of Krishna. That means every aspect of our life is an expression of service. No part of our life is kept separate from that spirit. The karma mishra bhaktas, or very neophyte devotees, are those who have a place, or let us say a category, in which they file the various aspects of their living. This is my entertainment side of life, where I enjoy. This is my family side of life. And within the family, there are different categories. There's the category where my family goes to the temple on Sunday, and there's the category where we enjoy so many things like television and other such activities for selfish enjoyment. It is my quota. So keep it separate. It's nobody's business. And then there is my occupation. And in my occupation, there's categorization of this much money is for Krishna, this much money is for me, this much money is for sense enjoyment, this much money is for the spiritual upliftment of my family, this much money is for my sense gratification of my family. And then we have our false ego, which has so many categories. This much time I'll give to glorifying Krishna, but this much time will go to glorify me. We all do this. It is not something that somebody else is doing. It's something that everyone is doing, except for those who are actually in the spirit of a servant. A person who is actually in the spirit of Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas, that means everything is coordinated according to what serves Krishna, what pleases Krishna. This is called pure devotional service. If we actually aspire for this, even if we have anartas, even if we have selfish desires, if we actually aspire for this, and we actually model our life in such a way that's favorable to developing this, Prabhupada says that is a level of being a pure devotee, because your aspiration and your endeavor is properly situated. So Narada Muni is such a pure devotee. He's Paramhams. He's guru of so many of the great souls. Prahlad, Dhruva, so many of the greatest personalities in the history of civilization were disciples of Sri Narada Muni, because he was giving them something that he had realized, not just a theoretical conception. He was delivering with realization and compassion the highest. The Prachetas are the sons of King Prachinibarhishat. They sincerely, with all earnestness, accepted the path of pure devotional service. They approached Lord Shiva, performed tapasya, and he gave them instructions of how to live, and he gave them a mantra in which they could completely absorb themselves in meditation on Lord Vishnu. And because they took to this process honestly, they became so dear to the Lord. And how does the Lord reciprocate with his devotee? That is love. Naturally, the father is dear to the son. So the Lord is sending Narada Muni to somehow or other convince King Prachinibarhishat to become a pure unalloyed devotee. But if Narada Muni were just to come in and say, King, you're in Maya, surrender to Krishna, the king would have certainly, being a very pious and civilized man from a very glorious family dynasty, he would have patiently tolerated whatever Narada Muni said and just sit and listen out of etiquette. But he couldn't really hear. He couldn't really assimilate. Because when the false ego goes into the defensive mode, it puts up many shields to protect itself from any type of infiltration that may destabilize its egoistic realities. Very dangerous. So what a preacher must do is somehow or other get his audience to put down their shields, to have faith in you as a person, to have trust in you as a well-wisher, and to actually be eager to hear what you want to say with the idea that it's really for my benefit. Because as soon as the ego puts up shields, we're depriving ourselves of the nourishment that the Lord is trying to provide for us. That is why it is so important that for a preacher or a preaching movement, integrity is everything. If you lose integrity, you really can't help anyone. Because without integrity, people simply do not open their hearts with trust. They're suspicious. If people see hypocrisy, speaking one thing, doing another thing, they can't really take what you say seriously. That's why precept is integrally important to whatever a person speaks. That was Prabhupada's power to those followers who were attracted by his compassion. They were watching. These were not just village old ladies from West Bengal who just, you know, accept everyone as Bhagawan. These are American college students who are raised from birth to doubt and to challenge and to revolt. That's the culture. That's why America is so successful materially. They're never satisfied. They're not happy just sitting under a tree or in a little simple hut chanting the holy names or talking about Krishna. They're never satisfied. They have to keep creating more and more technology and different types of entertainments and so many things just to somehow or other find some fulfillment in life. They're impelled to just create more, you know, develop the economy, develop technology, develop industry. Because everybody is just in such a spirit of challenging, revolting, questioning, seeking more. Hare Krishna. It's very dynamic, materially. If we could dovetail that same propensity spiritually, Prabhupada, he liked Americans that way. He saw, once they're convinced, but you have to convince them. If they could just dovetail that same revolutionary spirit toward Krishna, service to Krishna, what they could do for the world. Hare Krishna. So how is it? Millions and millions of young people rejected their religion of their parents, their family, and their society. Rejected. Total rejection. Rejected Judaism, rejected Christianity, rejected Islam, rejected all the religions that their parents were following. Why? Because they saw hypocrisy in their parents. They talk about their religion, but they do something else. Hypocrisy in the people going to their church. Hypocrisy in the priests of their church. That kind of people are not going to say, well, it's all right. No, challenge. Hypocrisy, reject it. Practice what you preach or get out. And that's what they'll say. They won't say, Swamiji, I have another appointment. Please go. They'll just say, get out. It's the American way, my friends. Once they don't like, once they sense hypocrisy, revolt. That's what the young generation is about. How did Srila Prabhupada attract people to surrender their lives and souls? Many of them had already read so many books on social revolution, on civil rights, on spirituality, on Eastern religions. They were searching, they were groping for answers. But they had to be real. They saw that what Prabhupada said, he was. And they saw amongst the people who were following him that what they spoke, they were. No hypocrisy. No contradictory behavior. In other words, they saw integrity. So they could put their hearts and their faith into hearing what he said and accepting every word. And Prabhupada was telling things that were completely foreign to their entire conditioning, that was challenging the very basic foundation of everything that their conceptions of reality were based on since birth. And they accepted it because they had faith that here's a man who has realized what he's speaking. He's seeing the truth. He's actually living for others. He has no selfish interests. He loves us. Even people he never spoke to. There were disciples for 6, 7, 8 years. And in all that time, most of his disciples never exchanged one single word with him. The closest they ever came was in a class, offering a flower at the Guru Puja. But they felt that here is a person who actually is my well-wisher. He is what the scriptures tell a saint should be. He's selfless. Therefore, they didn't need all kinds of, you know, personal problem solving. Others could help with that. There was someone that they had faith that they could dedicate their lives and soul to his teachings. That was his power. In other words, because of his nature, the people with the most formidable shields over their false egos in the entire planet Earth just took those shields and threw them in the nearest ocean and accepted with a humble spirit what Prabhupada said. And this is Srila Prabhupada's movement. What does that mean? That means every aspect of our life should represent Srila Prabhupada. Selfless integrity. No hypocrisy. No duplicity. Honesty. Purity. Very difficult for anyone to live up to this. But if we do not accept that challenge, we could never attain true devotion. As long as we have compromised standards, we remain birth after birth after birth neophyte devotees. It's taking that challenge of trying to follow in his footsteps, of trying to protect his integrity. He said ISKCON is his body. That means ISKCON must portray to the world him, what he portrayed to the world. And by striving to do so, that is our hope of attaining the mercy of Krishna and the ultimate purpose of life. That takes great humility. When you make mistakes, you become humble and actually correct. To actually come to the platform of receiving mercy. Why was Srila Prabhupada like this? Because he's coming in the parampara of great souls like Brahma, Vyas, Narada, Madhavendra Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupan Raghunath, Sanatan Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. These are all selfless, pure, unalloyed servants of God and all living beings. This is what he is representing in his life. No separate categories. Everything is put into one folder. Service to Krishna. It's all directed in that flow. Because that's what changes people's hearts. Spiritual life means transformation of consciousness. That's what it is all about. Transformation of people's individual hearts. And everything about spiritual life is with that aim. It is not that spiritual life is just having big festivals and enjoying. It's not that spiritual life is just about surrendering to things that you don't want to do because it's your duty. It's not that spiritual life is defeating atheists, Mayavadis, with logic and argument. It's not that spiritual life is keeping people well disciplined and obedient. It's not that spiritual life is about, you know, having a temple or an altar where millions of people are coming and saying, how beautiful, and taking photos. All these things are only really spiritually beneficial to the extent that the effect of whatever we do is transforming people's hearts, making them realize the value of humility rather than defensive, futile pride. People live by this principle and they die by this principle of trying to somehow or other justify and defend their false ego. That's what material life is about. transformation means humility. Trinadapi sunichena taror iva sehishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadhari. Humility means let them step on my head and I'll be the grass below their feet. Let them cut my branches and I'll give them shade like a tree. Let them blaspheme me, ridicule me, and kick sand in my eyes, but I will offer all respects. Materially, this is impossible. But transformation of the heart means this is what's going on inside of us. Is it? If it's not, we have to reevaluate our spirituality. We have to reevaluate how we're practicing bhakti. This is actually the effect of sincere practice of devotional service. We actually start to transform into humble servants rather than proud masters. Self-control, this is a transformation. This is an I, me, mine society where we want to enjoy so many things we want to. We want to enjoy tasting and hearing and seeing and touching and smelling and so many other things. Transformation of heart is when all of our senses are being used to serve God, to serve God's devotees, to serve Guru, to serve every living being according to their needs and my capacity. That's transformation. What is valuable to us is to the degree we please Krishna. Not playing this insane game of materialistic society. It's really insane what the world is all about. People are just stuck in their false egos. They're stuck in their enjoying propensities. They have to prove so many things to so many people. And what's the result of all the evidence that you create in your life of who you are and what you represent and the powers that you have? The end is your body's burned by fire and they sweep the ashes in a river. And whatever remains, the worms will just feast. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this. I gave a lecture once. I'm not going to mention the name of the place or anything. But I gave a lecture on Durlabha Manava Janma. Very nice song of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. And I began by reading the translation. In that song, Bhaktivinoda is talking about this incredible Mahotsav that he was going to sponsor. It's like sometimes our congregation, at the disappearance day of their grandfather or their father or the birthday of their child, they sponsor a Mahotsav, a big feast. Well, Bhaktivinoda talks about the last feast that he was going to sponsor, Mahotsav, where his body was going to be the preparations, the feast, and the dogs and the jackals and the vultures were going to feast to their full satisfaction. Hare Krishna. It's a very nice song. But one man stormed out of the temple. Couldn't tolerate it. Impossible. How could anyone preach like this? Against family life, against the physical body. Bhaktivinoda was a grihastha. He took better care of his children than anyone I've ever heard of. They all became pure devotees. They loved him. They loved Krishna. They loved humanity. Very special. But it is a fact. Bhaktivinoda is very graphically trying to explain what is the conclusion of a whole life of trying to defend and justify your ego. Mahotsav. For either the jackals, the vultures, or the fire. What's the use? Before that day comes, we have to be without ego. We have to give our hearts to Krishna. That's transformation. And everything that a devotee does, and everything a spiritual movement is meant to do, is help to create transformation in people's hearts. And in order for that to happen, we have to first establish faith, trust in what we say. We're carriers of the most holy message in all of history, the message of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, the last word of Vedic literatures. The cream of all transcendental knowledge, the ripened fruit of all the teachings of Veda. And the great acharyas in our Gaudiya Vaishnava parampara have carefully passed down that fruit. As soon as people see hypocrisy, duplicity, disunity, egoistic clashes, mistrust, who's going to want that fruit? It's a spoiled fruit. When you go to the market, you look for good fruit. You don't look for spoiled fruit. The preachers, they're looking for spoiled fruit to make them ripe and good. But the people in general, and even the devotees amongst themselves, unless they see the real thing, they become disheartened. Everything about our spiritual life, according to the acharyas, is based on the development of faith. Without faith, you cannot make even one particle of advancement. You must have faith. Our spiritual development is simply on the basis of how our faith is developing. According to Shastra, if we have implicit faith in Guru and Krishna, all the knowledge of Vedas is revealed. All the qualities of God and the demigods manifest within our life if we simply have that faith. So what is Vaishnav society about? Vaishnav society means a society of people who share one harmonious ideal to help nourish and protect each other's faith by how we deal with each other, by how we speak with each other, and by how we deal with the people in general. This is of utmost importance. We should all dedicate our lives to help others have faith in the friendship, in the love, in the trust, in the society of devotees. And that doesn't come by blaming other people. That comes through transformation of our own hearts. As long as people are saying this person like that and this person like that, get out, my friend. You're just all nonsense. Nothing more to be said. If you see problems with others, change yourself. Otherwise, your criticizing is just a worse problem than the problem you're talking about. Yes, there's problems. Yes, there's mistakes. As long as everybody's just pointing their fingers at everybody else, we're just living in the envious, materialistic way of Maya. We're victims. That's not what Vaishnavism is about. I must dedicate myself to being the real thing. I must be forgiving. I must be humble. I must be in a service attitude. I must be looking to actually encourage faith and hope in others. And this means whether you're a new bhaktin or whether you are a temple commander, or whether you're in the hierarchy of management, spiritually or materially, it's everyone's responsibility to do the right thing in their own lives so that we can be generators of faith and hope in the hearts of others, and thus pleasing Krishna. Any cheap fool could blame other people for problems. Anyone. Doesn't take integrity. Doesn't take spiritual realization to do that. But unfortunately, and please take this very seriously, because your life is on the line at every moment according to what you choose to do and what you choose to speak. That's what Krishna's seeing. And that's what Maya's seeing. She sees an opening, she'll take your life. And how does Maya take the life of a devotee? She'll take it away and use it like a puppet, and the devotee will think, I am the true Vaishnav. Everyone's wrong but me. That's really the victim of Maya. That is the power of delusion. So it's very serious. We must all individually, personally work on transforming our hearts and creating a generating effect of that, where we can generate such faith and hope by our good qualities that we could help transform other people's hearts. Narada Muni, such an expert preacher, he's talking to a king. Kings usually have big false egos. Even if they're pious, even if they're religious, still they think they know everything about everything. Isn't that the way people are when they become big in this world? It's actually very dangerous. Any type of power has such a corrupting effect on the heart if we're not very, very careful. If we have vast learning, the power to influence people by our speaking, by our memorization of verses, by our logic, by our presentation, if we influence people, that's power. If we have political, managerial position, power. If we have money, power. We have abilities, power. That's where Maya's going to work. That's where she works hardest. Wherever there's power. Because where you get power, you have influence over others. And when you become corrupted, then gradually everyone's faith just goes down. Everyone's heart just becomes crushed. Yes? Maya's expert. Daivi Yesha Guna Mayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. She's Krishna's energy. She knows what she is doing. And she's been doing it since time immemorial. So she has practice. She's tested and experimented, and she knows what works. We could find certain solutions in the laboratories by testing for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. She's been experimenting with human beings of what works for trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of years and beyond. She knows. If you knock down the persons on the top, then the people below, they're crushed. That's what happens. So give people power, then corrupt them. But don't let them know they're corrupted. Make them think everyone else is corrupted except me. Hare Krishna. Do not think this cannot happen to you. Because it will happen to you. Unless you're very, very careful. It's not maybe. It will. On whatever level, False ego is a very insidious weapon that Maya uses to corrupt the soul. So King Prachini Barhishat, he's pious. He gives in charity. And what's the result? He's proud. I'm pious. I give in charity. What have you given? Look what I have given. Ah. He doesn't need tax write-offs either, because all taxes are coming to him. He's simply doing it for that inner satisfaction. Part of it is helping others, and part of it is feeding the poor, and the other is feeding the ego. Very dangerous. How can somebody like that submissively listen to somebody else? And he has vast wealth. He has vast armies. So Narada Muni went in there and he understood, here is a pious religious man who's just come to the egoistic desire to enjoy. But his sons are on the line of pure devotion, so therefore I must give mercy to him. Ah, that is Narada Muni. Causeless mercy. So here he is telling King Prachini Barhishat, he's going to explain all of his faults to him in such a way that the king is going to relish hearing it. Now that is brilliance. Because if you relish something, you really open yourself up for more. Yes? If someone gives you sandesh with salt instead of sugar. Have you ever had sandesh with salt instead of sugar? I once made it like that. Someone went in the kitchen and put the salt in the sugar container. It said sugar. So, you know, I'm just an innocent person. I just make it. It was supposed to go to Prabhupada. Somehow or other, somebody tried a piece before. It says, you don't want to send this to Srila Prabhupada. It's horrible. You take what, even though it looks so nice, it was four layers, different colors, and just people were... just wanted to eat it, but then they couldn't eat it. They were repulsed. They had no appetite for it. Yes? If you relish something, and even if you have no appetite, Prabhupada said if you cook food nicely, actually Prabhupada talks about our temples. Very high standards. We have a long way to go. Radha Gopinath temple is humbled when you read Prabhupada's instructions of his instructions. He said the Sunday feast should be such opulent, delicious prasad that even if a person has no hunger whatsoever, just by smelling it and tasting it, he'll be eager to eat the entire feast. Huh? So that's one of our goals. Would you all be happy if we achieved that goal? I was suspecting a positive response. So when you're relishing something, your appetite for it increases. If you're not relishing something, even if you're hungry, you don't have any appetite. Yes? Just like people are starving, and there's no water, there's a drought, they're starving of thirst, and they're living right on the shore of the ocean. They're actually on the verge of death because there's no water to drink. And there's trillions and trillions and trillions of liters of water free for anybody and everybody, everywhere in the ocean. But they can't drink. They won't even drink a drop of it. Because it's unpalatable. Yes? So if we present Krishna consciousness in an attractive way, people's appetite, their eagerness, their enthusiasm to receive it becomes very, very great, very stimulated. That is why hypocrisy, duplicity, disunity, when people see the people following, fighting and having ego battles, what does it do? It takes the message of Gita and just puts salt into it. It's not a subji either. Sandesh. Gita Sandesh. Yeah? Well, even though the milk is there, everything's there, but when you mix it with all this ego and everything, and then people don't have an appetite to hear it from you. Some of our gurukulis in the West, they don't care how good you speak. They just want to see that you're living. Or what they say, you walk your talk. Or in their language, walk your talk, man. It's a blunt way, but that's the reality. They're sick and tired of big, big, lofty speakers who don't behave properly. But a little housewife who just says to chant Hare Krishna, they'll surrender if they see she lives by what she represents. Faith. So here is Narada Muni. He is going to explain every one of the faults of King Prachinibarhishat. He's going to tell him he's lusty. He's going to tell him he's an egomaniac. He's going to tell him he's a murderer of innocent animals. He's going to tell him that he's a dancing dog to his wife. Just come for the future classes. You'll see what he's going to say. Now you tell me, who can tell that to a king? King, you're a murderer. King, you're an egomaniac. King, you're a lusty fool. King, you're a dancing dog on the strings of your wife. Huh? You're too much attached to your tongue and eating things. You're a selfish. Narada Muni told him all of this straight on. And the king relished it. It was like a feast. He just opened his tongue and his belly and his heart and every pore of his brain substance just to drink the nectar of Narada Muni's words. Because Narada Muni just changed the names. Obviously, King Prachinibarhishat had that gossip tendency. He relished hearing the faults of others. Even though he was a great soul and a great devotee. Lord Chaitanya was talking about Hiranya and Govardhan Majumadar, and I offer my prostrated obeisances to lotus feet before I continue. He said to Raghunath Das Goswami, I love your father and uncle, they are like my own uncles. They are like my grandfather, my parents. Therefore, I can speak jokingly about them. He said, materialistic life is like a ditch that people go to pass. You are very learned in the philosophy. I will give you honorary Bhakti Shastri degrees. He said, your father and uncle are like worms where? Ah, Bhakti Vedanta degree. said, materialistic people who are trying to enjoy materialistic life are like worms in stool. He said, even though your father and uncle are devotees, they were sincere devotees. They were giving charity to the Vaishnavas. They were chanting the names, but they were attached. Lord Chaitanya was expecting Raghunath Das Goswami to be on a whole nother level of devotional service, of selfless renunciation. Oh, Narada Muni here is just change the names. He told an allegorical story of King Prachinibarhisha with the name King Puranjan. And it was such a fascinating way he told the story that the king was at the edge of his throne listening, drinking nectar. And the message was going deep into the core of his heart. And by the time he realized, Narada Muni's talking about me, by the time he came to that conclusion, he was completely transformed and he was ready to surrender to Krishna wholeheartedly. By the time he realized Narada Muni was just chastising me, this whole sweet story, he was ecstatic about it. Because he developed complete faith that Narada Muni is really his well-wisher. In these verses, Narada Muni is describing the city of nine gates. King Puranjan lived in the city of nine gates. Now, I don't want to spoil your appetite. But Narada Muni, this allegorical story is not only for King Prachinibarhisha, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam because he's preaching to you and me. Hare Krishna. He's exposing all of us. He's exposing the fallibility and the defects and the egoism of every conditioned soul. And when we read this narration, we shouldn't just think this is about King Prachinibarhisha. We should understand Narada Muni speaking to me. And literally, not everything might fit. Brahmacharis may say, how is he talking about me? I don't have a wife. But you may have six wives. Your five senses in your mind. Yes? Symbolic. And from the other point of view, for ladies, you have six husbands. Your five senses in your mind. So in this way, Narada Muni is preaching to us. Puranjan means, really, the spirit soul. And he's explaining how this King Puranjan had so many desires. So many desires. And these desires, he was so much longing to fulfill. He was searching everywhere to find a place to fulfill it. And in the same way, the spirit soul takes birth after birth after birth trying to fulfill their desires. And he finally found the ideal place to fulfill his desires, a city with nine gates. The city means the human body. Anil Bhai. Did you just come? Very well. Very happy to see you. The nine gates are the openings, the eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, and the evacuation organs. They are the holes of the body, the nine gates. And then he explains how within this city, it's surrounded by walls and parks. And Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas are explaining the walls means the skin. Your body really is like a house, yes? And the walls are your skin. And Then there's towers. The towers are the high parts, like the head and the nose. And the hair. The hair all over your body, they're considered to be like parks. Nice grassy parks. Yes? Brahmacharis keep their parks very... They keep the grass cut very nicely. And then he explains that the canals are the wrinkles in your body. And as you get older, more and more canals start developing in your body. And the eyes are the windows. And then he explains that the eyelids are the protective gates. And the gold and silver and iron within this city of nine gates are the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And he's going to go on to explain that the most important part of the city is the capital. Yes? The capital of the kingdom. The capital of this city of nine gates is the heart. And generally in capitals, there's a lot of ornamentation. Traditionally, the capital is the palace where the king lives, where there's jeweled crowns and there's jeweled thrones and there's marble and there's the greatest opulences in the capital, yes? So similarly, the jewels, the pearls, and all of these various things are the desires that are so precious to us within our hearts. And from the heart, from the capital, the directives are given to the entire body, to the entire city. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, Cheto Dharapana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Navapana, that if we want to actually do something good for ourselves and others, the essence of life is to clean the heart, to purify the desires within the heart. Then naturally, everything auspicious follows. But if we do everything else, but the heart remains full of lust, envy, anger, greed, pride, and illusion, it's all superficial. It is all temporary. We can put on a show for some time, but actually, if our heart is not actually clean, if our heart is not humble and pure, then everything will deteriorate. All our virtues will be reversed in due course of time. Because in the world today, it's very difficult to be good. There's so many temptations. There's so many threats. And the easy way to get out of it is to be corrupt. Yes? It's so easy to lie. I don't mean lying down to sleep. I mean, that's also very easy, actually. But today, people need sleeping pills even to do that, just to lie down. But to be honest, as long as it's convenient, as long as everything that you're hoping will happen is happening, then it's very easy to be honest. But when there's a risk of loss, loss of prestige, loss of profits, loss of position, it's very difficult to be honest. It's very easy to lie. Yes? All virtues will be tested by Maya through temptations and fears to see what is the substance of our conviction. And those tests are what make us strong if we remain faithful to the ideals that are sacred in our lives. It's easy to break the regulative principles. It's socially acceptable. It puts less pressure on the mind and senses. There's less pressure from the people around us. Yes? Which is easier? I'm not speaking to the Raganuga Bhaktis out there, but to the struggling devotees. There may be a few of you. Which is easier? To chant 16 rounds every day or to not chant? Which is easier? There'll be temptations. I don't have time. I have other priorities. There's pressures on me. Maybe not for the next month. I remember that one wonderful student we had. He was a medical student. And for his final exams, he reduced his chanting less than half to prepare for his final exams. And I think he stood first in his class in his final exams. So people were thinking, maybe that's the thing to do. But then in the celebration where he was being honored, he died of a heart attack. He's 22 years old. I do not know how much at the moment of death his standing first in his exam helped him. But whatever rounds he chanted, that's what was there to save him. So there's tests of circumstances that's going to test our morality, our ethics, our sense control, our regulative principles. It's easy to sin in Kali Yuga. It's very difficult to live a good life. Therefore, it's very rare that people are willing to do it. Because as long as our honesty, as long as our nobility, as long as our integrity is based on impressing others, or based on just intellectually doing the right thing, we will eventually fall victim to the temptations, pressures, and the fears. In order to stand up, we must have a purified heart. Because the heart is the foundation. If you build your house on a strong foundation, nothing can push it down. If you build your house on sand, it can be a glorious mansion. But the first heavy wind will crumble. So the capital, what is in business? They talk about capital investments. In spiritual life, the capital investment that actually gives real substance to the foundation of all of your endeavors is purifying the heart through the sincere and honest chanting of the holy names. And the association of saintly people. Spiritual life is impossible without regular association with saintly people. Because when we're in the association of sadhus or sincere devotees, we become refocused. The material world has to put us out of focus of what really is the ideals we're striving for in life. There's just too many other factors that are just bombarding us. Yes? But hearing, hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's name in the association of devotees, readjusts our focus, keeps us on the right path, gives us the spiritual strength in which we could actually represent Krishna, represent Prabhupada without duplicity, with integrity, holding our ideals sacred. It is not possible without sadhana and satsang. It is the satsang of Narada Muni that is just completely focusing King Prachuni Barhishat's intelligence, cleaning his heart. By the time Narada Muni finishes his narration, you will find in King Prachuni Barhishat a total transformation of consciousness. And that is what life is for, the transformation of our consciousness. And the transformation of the consciousness of our brothers and sisters in this world. To be instrument of the Lord to carry out that transformation in others' hearts. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? I do not know where this microphone will end up. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. During the lecture you mentioned about criticizing, instead of criticizing others, if one focuses on his own integrity, that's what is actually wanted. It's very easy to criticize others. However, Srila Prabhupada has often mentioned that you can make spiritual advancement just by criticizing Mayavadis. How do we reconcile this particular? Srila Prabhupada often mentioned that you can make spiritual advancement just by criticizing Mayavadis.
Criticizing?
Mayavadis. Mayavadis.
Mayavadis.
How do we understand this particular? Or criticizing those who are claiming to be God, imposters. During neophyte stage, we do that quite often. We also don't have that integrity of towards devotional service. How do we understand this aspect?
If you criticize anyone with envy in your heart, then it contaminates you. But criticizing Mayavadi philosophy is an act of compassion because it's a disease. You'll note that Prabhupada generally he would do whatever was necessary to save people's lives. But generally Prabhupada would not publicly talk about people. He would talk about disease principles, right? In his books, how often does he speak against Mayavad philosophy? How often does he give a name and criticize a person? He's criticizing the disease, but it's not really criticizing. He's simply exposing the danger of a disease to save your life from contracting that disease. Our Akrura Prabhu, or our Dr. Sholanki Prabhu, they are working for the Maharashtrian government in health services. Yes? When there's an epidemic, when there's malaria epidemic, or when there's an AIDS epidemic, there is an AIDS epidemic in Maharashtra. They were giving me statistics. Is fearful to hear it. What's happening right outside these doors? What kind of a growing forest fire of an epidemic is going on? Of a morbid disease. Now, if you say, well, I'm not going to criticize anyone. Actually, AIDS is very nice. The problem was with me. Is that compassion? The problem is I eat too much. But AIDS is very nice. No, you have to explain. AIDS kills. The more people understand the dangers of AIDS, the less they'll be willing to expose themselves to it. Cigarette smoking. If somebody's smoking cigarette, well, if you're speaking principle, to say that person's a demon because he's smoking cigarette, that's not right. But if you want to save the person's life, tell your children the dangers of cigarette smoking. How many hundreds and thousands of people die of cigarette? It's the second greatest cause of disease in many parts of the world. Diseases caused by cigarette smoking. Kills hundreds and thousands of people suffer and die every year. So is it compassion saying it's all right? It's a nice plant. Do it as for you like. No, you explain because compassion, you want to save a person. So what is Mayavad philosophy? Mayavad philosophy injures and kills the propensity for devotion. It kills it. It's a disease to a devotee. If you think that devotional service is an illusion, if you think that Krishna's body is an illusion, if you think that Krishna's pastimes are Maya, illusion, if you think that Krishna's name is Maya, illusion, if you think that you are God, the Supreme, and service is an illusion, is there any hope for such a person to develop pure love of God, to love Krishna? Is it possible? If ultimately he's an illusion, how could you love him? Mayavad philosophy kills the propensity for loving service, eternal loving service. So out of compassion, he's not criticizing, he's simply exposing the dangers to save your life. When you have a child, you're going to tell your child the dangers of cigarettes. You're going to tell your child the dangers of illicit sex with prostitutes. You're going to tell your child the dangers of alcohol. Won't you? You may not be able to force the child to obey, but if you love the child, you're going to warn him against these dangers. You're going to warn him against cocaine and heroin. If you don't, they'll take it. Because so many people are doing it. It's fun. It feels good. For a while. According to every government in the world, the best cure for these social diseases is awareness. AIDS awareness. Drugs awareness. Alcohol awareness. Cigarette awareness. Yes? What is awareness? Awareness is education. That works better than just letting a person get an incurable disease and then somehow or other trying to give drugs to cope with it. That's compassion. So the healthy condition of the heart is eternal loving emotions toward Krishna. In Mayavad philosophy, it's impossible to love Krishna if you're affected or infected by that. How could you love Krishna if ultimately you're going to be greater than Krishna? Yes? It's not real love. It's a shallow, superficial love. So that's not criticism. That's compassion. But a foolish child may take it as criticism. In America, 12-year-old kids are taking cocaine. It's not uncommon. 10-year-old children are smoking cigarettes, addicted. It's not uncommon. If the parents try to tell them, cocaine is not good for you. Well, all my friends are doing it and they're having fun. And I like it. I enjoy it. They say, it's not good. And if the child says, why are you criticizing my friends? Why are you criticizing me? That means they just don't understand. The parents aren't criticizing. They're trying to save your life. Prabhupada was trying to save our spiritual lives. He wasn't criticizing anyone. Is that clear? Yes, one more question, and then we will end. And everything culminates in Govinda, ultimately.
Maharaj, you're mentioning about hypocrisy, Maharaj.
Huh?
You're talking about hypocrisy. You see that sometimes, like for example, this is an imaginary example, but it happens many times, that there are two devotees, they are on the leadership position, they are dealing with many people's life, they are guiding them. But unfortunately, amongst them only, there is not a good relationship. And because they can't relate to each other, they don't fight personally, but that difference of opinion leads to such an extent that they are consciously, you know, try to avoid another person. But unfortunately, it is seen and observed by their own people whom they are preaching. You know, you are talking about relationship, but unfortunately, you don't have a relationship with, you know, you are equal, and it is seen and observed. So is it that they just keep like that without relating each other, or they should bust open, you know, have some time of kind of communication? It may lead, they may argue each other, or just tolerate like that and just avoid each other's face. What they should do, Maharaj? How they should avoid this problem?
What is your opinion?
I'm confused, I don't know.
What is your estimation?
I need answer from you, Maharaj.
There is different levels in which we can serve. There's first class, second class, third class, fourth class, fifth class, and so many classes as far as the quality of our service. If we really want to inspire faith in the hearts of others, then somehow or other, we will humble ourselves, we will resolve our differences, and we'll learn to love and trust and relate to one another on a higher platform than these temporary differences that we have. If we accept Krishna as God, if we accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the means of approaching God, if we accept Guru and Gauranga as our guides, we're united. Everything else is a detail, is it not? How many people in the world share that with us? Faith in our Guru, faith in Prabhupada, faith in approaching Krishna through the loving compassion of Srimati Radharani to attain eternal service in Goloka. How many people in the world share that with us? And here's somebody who wholeheartedly shares the fundamental principles of our life with us. What are the differences about? They're not important. We should transcend these temporary differences for the higher purpose of instilling faith in other people's hearts. And Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate with one another. Cooperation doesn't mean avoiding so that you don't beat each other with sticks. Cooperation means you actually interact in a positive way for a higher purpose, is it not? So that is ideal. That is what will attract the highest substance of mercy into our lives if we make that sacrifice of just putting aside the details and agreeing and relating. We could have disagreements. That's fine, but our relationship is above that. amongst devotees, we'll find that some of the most intimate, loving friendships of devotees, on a lower platform, there are so many disagreements. But their love for each other is above that. You may argue with the person affectionately about the disagreements at certain times, but your love and your camaraderie and your respect is on a higher level of the sacred things that you have in common. That's Krishna consciousness. Yes? Draupadi said, release Ashwatthama. And Bhima said, kill the rascal. Huh? Kill him. He deserves to die. And Draupadi said to Arjuna, release him. He's a Brahmin. All he did is kill all my children. But his mother should not suffer the way I'm suffering. I know what it's like to have no children. He's the only child. His mother should not go what I'm going through. She's a respectable lady. And Bhima couldn't care less about Ashwatthama's mother. His concern was might. What is the law? What is the state? This is the right punishment for a murderer. So Draupadi and Bhima had a very serious disagreement. But do you think it affected their relationship? Even the slightest bit? They totally disagreed. But she had complete faith in his protection, and he had complete faith in her chastity, and they both had complete faith in each other's love for Krishna. They were as intimate as a husband and wife could possibly be, despite their differences. Yes? That's Krishna consciousness. So that's the first class level. To develop loving, trusting relationships for the welfare of everyone, including ourselves, by basing on that relationship on the foundation of higher principles. Second class is respectfully avoid each other to not create commotion or apparads. Yes? Last class is, no, third class is to fight. Fourth class is to fight in public. Fifth class is to blaspheme that person to everyone we meet. And it goes on and on. Yes? So, we should be striving for the highest. We shouldn't be satisfied with something that's low. Does that answer your question? Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.